Welcome to Two Slant Trees, the podcast where a married couple learn to cope differently during social isolation while reading Brené Brown's The Gift of Imperfection together. This is episode 13, and today I'll be talking about guidepost 9, which is cultivating meaningful work by letting go of self-doubt.
Yeah, a lot of what stood out to me in this chapter was what she describes about having meaningful work is a defining feature of millennials these days, or what we're made fun of.
Millennials these days.
Like,
nobody likes millennials.
I like you. You're a millennial.
Oh, that's good.
We're millennials. So the idea, like, we're often made fun of wanting a job or work that is meaningful or something we're passionate about.
Yeah. And you're thinking, like, there's maybe an aspect of, like, the book just being 10 years old where it's like,
this is something that,
like, follow your dreams.
And but yeah, it's 10 years old, but we're already, like, we've picked up
we've been following our dreams for
10 years,
and look at where it's got us now.
In a good place.
Oh, okay.
But she starts the talk off the chapter talking about how she noticed wholehearted people talk about a sense of calling or had work that was meaningful to them, and so she found more patterns in the data and some. Here were some of them. She said, we all have gifts and talents, and when we cultivate them and share them with the world, we create a sense of meaning and purpose in our lives. And she said, squandering our gifts brings distress to our lives.
Yeah.
She says, when we don't use our talents to cultivate meaningful work, we struggle. We feel disconnected and weighed down by feelings of emptiness, frustration, resentment, shame, disappointment, fear, etc., even grief. So the other thing she noticed was that using our gifts and talents to create meaningful work takes a tremendous amount of commitment because in many cases it doesn't actually pay the bills.
Yeah.
More
on that later.
And then she says, like our gifts and talents, meaning for each of us is unique. So no one can define what is meaningful to each of us. I like this list a little bit because it kind of shows me what is common among people and human nature. Like, she saw these as patterns within the people she was researching.
Yeah.
So
how they connected kind of their work to a deeper purpose. Or found meaning in what they were doing.
Or that each of them found meaning in what they were doing. And that was a hallmark. That was a sign of wholehearted living.
Wholehearted living, yeah.
But for me, it was like, when I saw that idea that squandering our gifts brings distress to our lives. Like, I have felt that in the past. So it's like, I don't know. It's just nice to know that most people feel that way.
Squandering. What a word.
Squelching.
Squandering. Obviously, you feel bad about squandering something. Right? Like, it's like, you squanderer.
Just because it's a weird word.
I don't know. It just sounds like a bad, really bad thing to do.
I think because that word to me is associated with the prodigal son who went and squandered his wealth.
On wild living.
On wild and dissipation.
Dissipation. Yeah.
So, but you had the question.
Yeah, because I was like, but what actually even is meaningful work? Because I feel like that's what we need to talk about here. Because it sounds a little bit like she's like,
your
job
truth.
Is not a meaningful work. It's
find
like,
your truth.
Maybe it is meaningful to like have a job and to like just work. Right? Because it does seem a little bit like.
She does say that anything can be meaningful if you find it meaningful.
Okay.
She does kind of say that at the end,
I guess we assume the best of her, right? She's actually like, small things are small minds. You know? She actually does that. It's like, guess if you're really dumb, you could find that meaningful.
Like, all that memes today are like, nobody's making fun of the grocery store workers as not being, like, important people.
True? Like, were you before?
No, but everybody,
like, the
memes.
That's just a meme thing to say.
Of course it is a meme thing to say. But, like, you know, or some other, I saw a tweet that was like, you know, they say I'm an important worker, but my paycheck does not, like, right?
Yeah.
But, like, I guess some jobs, like, a lot of retired people enjoy doing because they just get to talk to people, like grocery, like
get
groceries or whatever.
Yeah.
But
not right now.
Stay
at home. I guess you can retire pretty young. If you're over 70, I think you're supposed to stay
at home. Yeah, you're supposed to stay at home.
But they stopped carding people in Quebec. They realize that's actually, like, a human rights violation.
What is it? Discrimination?
Yeah.
But literally it is discrimination because they're discriminating against, you're not supposed to
buy
alcohol if you are under the age of
Well, that's illegal. Yes. But actually being out of the household when you're over 70, at least in Quebec, it's still legal.
It's not yet illegal.
You can go for a walk and you go do your groceries. You can take care of yourself. But
people are totally calling the cops on each other in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I approve.
That's because you're a narc.
Narc.
Snitch.
Snitches get snitches.
Yeah.
Because
I was thinking, what does meaningful work? Because even for us, like, we're in ministry. And for us, it really felt like we were called to it.
Mm-hmm.
To come and do this. And so
she said that was a phrase that people often use, was a sense of calling.
Yeah. And so it's just kind of funny because for me, it's like putting meaning first or putting a sense of like mission or calling
is natural
first
to us.
Was like the very, wasn't like we were hoping to make a living at it too. And we have, but
it's not like we went into it for the money.
No, I don't think so.
How would that, like, I don't even understand.
I don't know. There's ways of doing. People are very creative.
People are creative. Yeah.
I'm sure we could find some get rich scheme out of this. But I think for me, because it was like, I really care about the mission and what we're doing, and I really like want to tell students about Jesus, and I want to do mission trips. The harder thing for me was actually finding the parts of the job where it's like that are boring and that I don't like.
Yeah.
Right?
Because it's every normal job.
And I think it's maybe every job. Like, realizing how missions or the work that we're doing, there's parts of it that are really, really cool.
Yeah.
But there are aspects of it that are just, they are just like any other job, right?
Yeah.
Right? That you have kind of that mix of like, I see it that like, in a given week, I have the things I like, I have the things that I'm good at, and I have the things that I like and am good at. I really like those.
Yeah.
And then there's just things.
And there's the things. And there's even some things that you probably hate doing.
Yeah.
Like emails or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Making sure people do work that they
do. I realized too that like over, like doing this for 10 years now, that I have more control over what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the proportion of time I spend on each of those things has remained the same because the things that I don't like and I'm not good at are still important and need to get done. And so I find that as I get better at some things in my job, there's still the things that are still kind of hard to do,
mm-hmm.
but I can't just be like, oh, get someone else to do that. No, it's like, I need to do those to actually get like a whole project done.
Yeah.
But I am finding it easier to do them more from a sense of like, oh, you don't have to like every single part of what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right. Or there's ways to make even that kind of the drudge work meaningful. You know, and even
it's a part of the whole.
It's just part of the whole, and even practically, just kind of learning when to schedule it in, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what jobs do you do on a Monday morning, and what jobs do you do on a Friday afternoon?
Yeah,
and I mean, I find doing the rotten jobs on a Monday morning for whatever reason to be a bit better. So then they're out of the way.
Yeah,
right. They get done, and you've been productive, and then you can do the other things.
So now everybody who has a meeting with Willie on Monday morning is going to know.
Well, it's not fully how it worked out because I actually have some really good meetings on Monday morning. Especially since coronavirus, everyone's schedule is just so awful that my Monday mornings are actually full of good meetings, but then...
Yeah.
If had it my way, it'd be...
Yeah, get the dumb stuff done first.
I have a cup of coffee and I'm just, you know, pounding out the stuff that needs to get done.
Mm-hmm. But I think, like, I wonder if, you know, we are not necessarily the norm that jumped into something that was something that we were so excited to do. So many people graduate and don't know what to do or get into university or college and like don't know what to do, and I find this is almost a little bit putting a high bar like on some people, like, you know, finding meaning in your work. I think everybody I know wants to do something they like, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, maybe that's not the one thing we have cultural to do. That's cultural. We're white, right? So like a lot of people have family obligations or lots of like intense, you know, expectations from their parents. And so, you know, I can't say that's wrong because that would be.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we didn't have like to provide for our parents.
Inappropriate, but like
right off the bat or anything like that. Yeah.
It's just a very different way of living life. But like, you know, it's usually our white friends who are like, I followed my dreams and now I'm broke, you know, like, definitely a more culturally white thing to say. So I guess, spin-off question is like, I think this is an interesting question to ask people who come from like a different cultural experience, you know, what would they say about meaningful work? Because, you know, my friend, she says her dad like always wanted to be a nurse. But you know, he was told you be a, like an accountant, a lawyer, a doctor, or an engineer, or something like that. And so he is an accountant, but like he's always wanted to be a nurse, but like he just like never complained and he did that. And he's, you know, providing for his family, you know, like,
yeah,
not usually the typical white experience. But anyways, back to us. We jumped right into something that we loved, and not everybody knows themselves well enough to know that what they will love or that they would will or will not.
Yeah.
So maybe that's just something that's like, you know, you can enter into when you're in your 30s, when you know
yourself. Yeah, and I think you go at the things at different ways, different times, right?
Maybe that's when side hustles come in. The other thing that millennials love.
So, yeah. Working two jobs.
But she kind of talks about that a little bit later.
Yeah. Being something slash something else. Yeah, yeah. Where one is maybe like, one is important because it's kind of providing for your needs. But then
the other one is what you really like.
What you really like or whatever. But.
Yeah. Like mechanic poet. Mechanic slash poet.
Writes poems for motorcycles.
About motorcycles.
Vroom. Vroom, vroom. Vroom, 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 vroom. That was a haiku.
That was haiku.
Yeah. Written by Honda.
Honda. So there she talks about what it is about meaningful work. And then she talks about what she calls the gremlins. The stuff that gets you down, which are the ideas of self-doubt and you're supposed to. Supposed to are like, I think, the hallmark of a quarter-life crisis or a half-life, what are those called?
Midlife,
half-life crisis.
I've heard that people in their 30s are in their midlife, but I've also heard that life expectancies are increasing, so you don't hit midlife till your 40s now.
Yeah, that would make more sense, because, what, 30s is not midlife? Like, that... What do you think
this salt and pepper, you know?
Yeah, that's because your wife is crazy. But, like... Not everybody we know is dying at 60.
No.
So how would...
So I'm 34 times 2 is 68.
Yeah.
So that's like a... I mean, that's not old. Sorry.
Well, in any case, the idea, I think when people get to a certain age and they feel like I should have this or I'm supposed to have had X or Y. Like, you know, I had a friend who turned 30 a few years ago and she messaged me and she's just like, shouldn't I have a fridge by now? Like what kind of 30-year-old am I? And I was like, okay. Like, for her, that was really important. It had never crossed my mind as something that I needed to have had when I was 30. I wanted to have children by the time I was 30. But, like, we know plenty of people. You just
feed them warm milk.
What?
Well, if you don't have a fridge and you have children, you're going to be in.
I had a fridge.
Oh.
But it was, like, didn't seem significant to have had a fridge.
Okay.
But anyways, so the supposed to's. So she says gremlins are the voices of doubt and criticism in our mind. It's the lies that come into our head to tell us. And they say things like, maybe everyone else has a special gift, but you don't. Mm. Or, sure, you're good at that, but you're not exceptional or good enough to make a difference with it. So it's like, I don't know, the weird lies in our head, the voices in our head.
Hmm.
Apparently, it's good to know that everybody else has voices in their head like me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I talk to him.
out loud, actually. He does. I'll be like, are you trying to talk to me? No. Oh, okay. You're just...
It's just working something
out. I was like, who are you arguing with? He's prepping an argument for the internet. Yeah.
Prepping a podcast.
So one of my gremlins, we kind of already talked about this a little bit, was like that idea, everyone wants to write a book. There's nothing special about that interest or unique to you that will make that a reality.
Hmm.
Like, anyways, but I really like this point. She kind of touched on it, but I expanded it a little bit. That these things can actually undermine our faith, because, well, at least in the Christian faith, using our gifts and talents is a way that we can worship God and participate in the body of Christ. So self-doubt in those things, in our gifts and our talents, can sabotage our relationship with God in that way. Or maybe not fully sabotage, but it can certainly impact. Okay. Are you looking for where she said it?
Yeah, yeah.
She said it, let's see.
Oh, here it is, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Because you're just not, like, recognizing who you are or recognizing how God made you.
Like, let's say you have the gift of teaching. And, but you're like, maybe you don't think you're as cool as the other teachers or whatever. And you're just like, well, that can't be true. I can't. But people, you know, and so you don't actually lean into that because you're like, well, you have shame or self-doubt or whatever. And then you're like, the church is actually missing its leg, as the saying goes.
We jump Are you not one metaphor tracking? Another. I'm just, it's not convinced, I guess.
Why?
Well, I don't know. Like, you don't always get to...
I don't
like squandering, right? Like not using what you have, sure, but like you don't always get to do everything that you're good at, right?
No, but I mean, I think I'm but talking yeah, about I mean, it you, in the sense you, of like let's like you're, but like if it's a real like spiritual gift and you're like and you are good at it, I think.
It, yeah, I guess kind of refusing to do something you're good at for just kind of like because you're shy or because you don't want to put yourself out there.
That's what I'm saying.
But sometimes like people don't have the chance to use their gifts. So to speak.
Yeah.
For a lot of other reasons too.
Absolutely.
Right?
But my like point is more that like when self-doubt is the one that's making you not try and lean into or grow in your gifting because, or you don't even believe it's actually, exactly.
I think Paul said to Timothy, he says like, fulfill the ministry that God has given you.
Yeah.
If you don't do that, sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So.
Oh, good. Like a 65% approval. It feels a bit like...
Stretching?
Yeah, stretching.
But so, well, in any case, like, if I think there's an element of, like, I think what she talks about is, like, where we do feel like we come alive when we're doing those things. And John Piper would say that God is most glorified when we are the most satisfied in him. And so there could be a connection there, where there's an element of, like, worship as we are feeling the joy of doing the thing that God created us to do and be.
Okay.
That's an okay for those who are not tracking. That's an okay as I am not convinced, but I will comment.
Yeah. I'm listening to you.
You're listening to me, but
it's not 100% agreement. Okay. That's okay.
That's fine. This is a discussion. Yeah. So she also talks about the gremlins of supposed to.
Yeah.
Which are, do you want to read those?
Yeah, sure. The ones we have are, so like you're supposed to be making money, not making meaning. Tell that to a philosopher. You're supposed to be a doctor. Your parents made that very clear. Or you're supposed to be brave and quit your job and follow your bliss and not even worry about money. I just love that. You're supposed to be a doctor. Your parents made that clear. I don't know who's listening to this, but I just remember there was a girl in residence on my floor.
Yeah.
And she wanted to be a doctor.
Yeah, and she was not going to be a doctor.
If I was ever in a situation where I needed a doctor and I walked in and she was the doctor, I would just hobble on out.
It's just like, it's okay, I take COVID.
I hope it wasn't her dad that was pushing her to be a doctor. See, maybe she should have been on his head. Maybe something else. Anyways, I don't know why people would push someone to be, like, maybe some careers, like race car driver or something, but like push someone to be a doctor that if they're not suited to it, it's like they could cause some real damage, right? Like,
yes. And that's probably why some people don't get into med school. It's because, like, you know, they might be smart, but they're, like, a lot of the med school screening stuff is more, like, about social, like, and social ability.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I don't know a whole lot about what doctors do.
That's what I've heard, at least.
They're mysterious people.
Yes. Smart, mysterious people. So she says, to overcome self-doubt and supposed to, we actually need to start owning the messages. What makes us afraid? What's on our supposed to list? Who says and why? One of the ones that I have heard in my head a lot is, if I was a better mom or like ideal mom, I'd feel able to stay at home with my kids full time and not go stir crazy and don't want to escape and do something else. I mean, a lot of moms feel like they're going crazy, but
yeah,
I have been working part time so that I can not feel that way.
Yeah.
And that like, so I like innately kind of feel shame about that. It's getting better, though. Do you want to read the best quote of the whole chapter?
Yeah. So she says, so these gremlins of self-doubt, or the gremlin of supposed to, and she says, gremlins are like toddlers. If you ignore them, they get louder. Which, it's kind of a cute quote, but toddlers have a max volume, and they can't exceed it. It's not like they have a bigger volume switch.
You are the dad.
You can close the door, and that puts another cap on the volume.
But you... from my discussions with other moms, husbands and dads have this incredible ability to not hear children screaming. Mothers, on the other hand, it just
maybe what's wrong with an old chapter. There's just like a
She's a woman.
There's a perspective. Yeah, like there's just like a.
This is the problem. She's a woman.
But there's a perspective that I just don't quite get.
You lack.
Right? Where I'm like, self-doubt, yeah, maybe. Self-doubt is like a toddler. You know, it maxes out a certain level and just.
Ignore it?
Yeah.
Well, what she says is even better, is acknowledging the noise.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably better.
She just
said. In some circumstances.
Like, it's usually best to acknowledge the lies of the gremlins and own it. Doing this doesn't give them more power. It gives us more power. We have the opportunity to say, yeah, I get it. I see that I'm afraid, but I'm going to do it anyways. Because I have the tools of courage, compassion, and connection.
Hmm.
And so the final thing that she says gets in the way of meaningful work is the struggle to define what we do in an honest way. Hmm. I struggle to understand this idea. Like, why is this... get in the way of meaningful work, because we won't actually admit that we do something that we enjoy doing.
Or I would put it the other way, where it's like we don't admit that like the parts that we don't like about our job are actually important too. Okay. Or that they can actually lead to like serving others or connection with people.
Mm.
Right? Where it's like I think it can go either way. If you're just not recognizing what your work is and you're just like, I don't know, you go to a meeting, you're like, this meeting's going to be really long, and I'm not going to like it. Should just be an email. I mean, and some of them maybe should be.
Yeah.
But if you're able to think through how it fits into a project, or how the people fit together, or that's more maybe suited to what the sort of work that we do with people, which is ministry.
So hope and optimism.
Yes.
Like, well, because, I mean, I... worked as a executive assistant and an administrator for a while, and not my strength by any means, but I enjoyed doing it because I felt like it was meaningful work because of like who I was helping.
Hmm.
But I think I wouldn't want to do that for just anyone.
Hmm. Yeah.
Like I would feel like right, you're on anyone else, you know, but yeah, in this case it was fine. Yeah. You know? But so she gives this example of this lady she met who was a jeweler. She made jewelry and she had bought some of these earrings and she saw it at a conference and like they were chatting and she's like, oh, what do you do? Like Brené Brown asked the girl what she did and the lady said like, oh, I'm a CPA. So she's an accountant, right?
Yeah.
And Brené was kind of like, what? Like, but aren't you a jeweler? And she's like, oh, well, you know, I do that on the side. I don't really make any money, so I'm not really a jeweler. But anyway, I was like, I'm wearing your earrings. Like, you're obviously a jeweler, you know?
Hmm.
But there was this element of, like, she didn't make enough money, so she couldn't call herself a jeweler.
Couldn't claim that title.
But she could have said, maybe I'm an accountant / jeweler.
Yeah.
But I listened to, you know...
Self-declared.
Yeah, well, jewelry. Like my self-declared
accountant.
Writing. No, that would be...
Self-declared doctor.
Self-declared accountant.
Yeah.
Like self-declared magician.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm not mathy. Sorry, Maria. Our friend Maria is doing her doctorate in math education. Crap, I get this wrong every time. Anyways, she quotes... Oh, yeah, she also said this about herself, Brené Brown. She didn't have enough courage to call herself a writer after she had even published these books.
Hmm.
She just said, like, it didn't feel legitimate, and she wasn't, quote, writer enough.
Hmm.
Wonder when
are you writer
enough? Writer enough. Hmm. So, let's talk about the final quote.
Okay. So this is Howard Thurman.
Yes.
Don't know who he is, but he has a quote in the book.
Yeah.
His don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive.
I love that.
You love that?
Okay. I love it. It's super cheese ball.
Don't ask what the world needs.
That's what.
Don't ask what your country can do.
Exactly. No, but right. I like it because I really love when people can like become who they are meant to be. Like that's something I love, helping people to connect with who they really are, what they want to do, and to like encourage them and to go and do it. Like I think that's something I'm good at.
Hmm.
And in my experience of like really connecting with just finding the things that I love to do and doing them and the joy that that brings and that sense of feeling alive, like, it's a wonderful thing. And so, of course, I love the quote. However, you do not understand how an economy can run on people.
I don't know if anyone knows how the economy works right now.
It's true.
Right? Like, I think the government's spending like $2 trillion. First off, that's a pretend number.
Exactly.
But also, it's like, so that's just, I think, like the entire economy for a whole year. So it's like, we didn't need to work at all. Like, they could have just sent us a check.
It's all fake.
That's all pretend. So maybe just coming alive is what the world needs.
Yeah.
And being full of yourself.
Full of yourself.
No, I don't think that's what you're getting at.
But I think,
I think we discount how hard it actually is to come alive in your work, right?
Especially if you have really crappy employer or like coworkers,
yeah,
where people are like, we work in a Christian environment where the environment is like, it's not perfect.
You're supposed to be nice. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, it's, I mean, you pray with one another and stuff like that. But like, when you have people who are like, you know, gossiping all the time and it's like, you know, caustic, like,
yeah,
you might like the job and hate the people.
Yeah. But like, it's hard work to, to kind of work in that environment maybe for a whole week and then come home and be like, it's miserable, but like, I don't want to think about it on the weekend. I want to just like do something else.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But then it's like, it's actually really hard work to then say, no, like, how can I change this situation? Right. How can I do something better or do something different where it's like, I'm not miserable all the time. Right. So I like recognizing like it's
hard work to change.
Yeah. But and sometimes it's a cop out to just kind of stick in a miserable situation and just be like, nothing's going to change. It's like,
courage, or?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's where the slash can come in. I think what she's talking about, like you might, like you do your job because it's what you're good at. I mean, you maybe don't love it because of you're not in the niche you want to be or whatever, but then you come home and you are a woodworker or you're a, you have a secret sewing career.
A secret sewing career.
I'm just imagining.
I can probably start it.
A dude.
Sure.
We can start making sewing masks.
Sure. Anyways.
But one of the things that we talked about a little bit was like, you know, you ask, well, isn't all work meaningful? And I think that kind of comes from, I mean, like Tim Keller talks about this in his book, Every Good Endeavor.
Well, it comes from the Bible, right?
Yes. But honestly, when was it? Like, it was only a couple of years ago when I clued into the fact, like, this is where I just clued into the fact that work was there before the fall.
Hmm.
Because I had always just like, I guess it's the lazy in me where I was just like, I don't want to work. Like, work, you know, I just always saw work as an idea of like toil and labor.
Work is sin.
No, it's just toil, right? But like
toil, boil the trouble.
Yeah, exactly. But like realizing, work existed before the fall means that it's like, it can be inherently good. It's just not always easy right now.
Yeah.
So I think you have maybe grown up with a good theology of work. I, on the other hand, have not.
We're here to work.
We don't need a vacation. We just need to get this work done.
Yeah.
That was a true quote from Willie's uncle.
Yeah.
Which he loves.
I could probably apply to every one of my uncles, but it was only one that actually said it. But yeah.
It's not my favorite quote.
But it resonates with me. But
I can understand the idea. Healthy. But
anyways, to conclude.
A
Bible verse. I don't have the reference, but Proverbs says, in all toil there is profit, but mere talk tends only to dissipation.
Is that what we're doing now?
I think we're dissipating. We don't want to waste your time, so we'll maybe wrap it up here.
And tomorrow,
you guys go and do some meaningful work. And tomorrow's the final one.
It's the final one.
The final countdown. Yeah.
Final countdown. Sorry. Good night.